I've always kind of struggled with like, they're all I have. And if we can't like figure out how to deal with something, it really affects me, obviously, because that's who I have in my unit. And so like really putting that effort and energy toward like making something happen that I knew in my gut and my bones was beyond important.
What's up, everyone? You're listening to the Do Hard Things podcast by Elite SRS. The purpose of this show is to share stories of hardship and victory as an encouragement for those in the middle of their own hard thing. Because we know hardship produces perseverance, which produces character, which ultimately produces hope. Today's guest is Lara Antonello. Lara is the owner of a Cuban food truck called La Usera and a former natural biologist and self-proclaimed bear person. Lara shares about her Cuban roots and the two-year battle with her parents over returning home to visit family. She talks about the emotional toll of all the discussions and shares that opening yourself up to be surprised by the people you love the most can lead to breakthroughs in your differences. If you enjoy the show, please don't forget to subscribe and leave a review so more people can be encouraged by the stories we share. Now, here's the conversation with Lara Antonello. All right, got Lara Antonello on the Do Hard Things podcast. Super excited to have you.
Thanks for having me. I'm so excited.
Yeah. This should be fun. So context for who you are, and I ask everybody the same question, but that's when people ask you, what you do, how do you answer that?
Oh yeah, that's a good one. I guess, yeah, my thing is that I am a restaurant owner. I run my very own food truck. Cool. I live in rural Idaho with my hound dog and my partner. And I absolutely love the mountains. I'm a former wildlife biologist, bear person. I worked a few seasons in Idaho as like a bear aware advocate person. And so my entire thing was educating people about bears for years. So careful, because I'll go off.
Oh, that's so good. Yeah. Okay. So you're in Stanley, Idaho, which you just called rural Idaho. For people who don't know, where in Idaho is it?
Sort of like south central. If you have the panhandle, just keep going south and it's in the middle of the little bottom part of the pan.
Okay. Got it. Yeah. Okay. So you've been there and you're a self-described bear person, which is interesting. I have a friend. I was just telling this story yesterday, so I'm just going to tell it right now. We went to a park and there's lots of grizzly bears. And I have a friend who was terrified of that fact. And it didn't help. Like, we saw a grizzly bear maybe 200 yards after we started our overnight trip on the trail. And so he was just like on heightened alert for 4 days. And I didn't realize how heightened alert, but like, you know, he's carrying around his bear canister everywhere, sleeping with it, you know, like just really concerned. Hey bear was like all I heard from him, you know. And we got back and his wife told me that like for probably a week or two after that, he was having nightmares, like punching at bears in his sleep yelling hey bear, and it was traumatized. He would have really benefited from coach him through what he was about to encounter.
Totally. I know that was definitely the main thing I dealt with in that job, was trying to get people to understand that they're just here and they're trying to eat berries and forage and do their thing.
Yeah.
They don't really want to mess with us unless we get in their way.
Yeah. No kidding. That's, you know, I guess sounds nice, but then the reality of a bear possibly being in your space, it's like, oh no, everything goes out the window.
Hey, did everything right having the bear spray though. That's good.
Yeah. At least we tried to hedge our bets a little bit. Totally. I think the first question is, you went from bears and fish and wildlife biology food truck owner
Yeah.
Which doesn't make a lot of sense. Yeah. So how?
Yeah. Oh man. Well, so it has always been a love, like food has always been a love of mine. Okay. It's a way that I have always showed people I love them. Like I love cooking for all my friends and family. And it's always been a thing in my childhood where like, if anyone didn't have anywhere to go for a holiday, they were coming to our house. Like we would have 30 people. Most of them, we were not blood relatives to, like everyone in my family is cooking all day, all night. Like, so we've always loved that. I grew up with that. And it's always been a big part of my life, but I've also always been a very like nature centric kind of like earthworm person. And so, yeah, I guess at this point I've sort of gone through a hybridization of the passions. So as we all know, the 2020, 2021 were kind of rough goes for everybody. Yeah. And I was working for the Forest Service at the time. And that was when I was doing my bearware education work. And it was just really busy on the forest, like peak visitation, because outside was the thing everyone was doing. And it was so awesome to witness. And it was really, really special to see like families out there and people actually taking time to do that instead of other activities that I personally don't value as much. Like, I'm like, we all should be communing in nature. This is great.
Yeah.
But obviously it takes its toll mentally and physically on a person, me, when my sole job was to try to educate like millions of visitors a day. And so it just over time, cause I had been doing field work since 2015, until 2021 and working in wildlife with all sorts of different critters, but that was my first sort of interface with the public thing and not just like, I'm surveying birds now, I'm surveying elk now. And the people interface, obviously, as you can imagine, is challenging, but I learned a lot and I sort of hit a point where I was like, am I trying to move up in the federal government? Because I was working for the Forest Service at the time. And I just had to be really honest with myself, like, do I want to become a biologist? Like, do I want to become like a rec specialist, all these things? And the answer just kept being no. And I had to ask myself very honestly, like, what the hell am I doing? And while all of this is happening, I'm on this big sort of soul searching journey always, but was sort of planning and replanning to go back to Cuba for the first time, because I'm Cuban American and I haven't been or hadn't been since I was a child and was supposed to go in May of 2020, which obviously that got canceled. And so I spent like 2 years just like dealing with so many people and knowing what I wanted to be doing with my time in the off season, but not being able to do it because we were still sort of navigating like really dark times. And I just was like, if I can't be in Cuba right now, and I want to own this part of my persona and myself living in rural Idaho, what if I just send it and have a little like Cuban empanada food truck in this tiny little town and teach people about the food, and I can even have it be bear themed, which it is. And so, yeah, it was sort of this like shot from the hip where I just wanted to reconcile with myself a little bit and be honest with like how I can connect with myself without at the time being able to travel to reconnect with family. And how I can continue being happy in an area where there isn't really a huge Latino population and like sort of bring that into the community space that I really love and help share that. And so that's why I opened a food truck. It was bananas.
So you probably didn't have a lot of like context for how to open a food truck. So I'm guessing you went to like the school of YouTube or something, but how long was the process from like, and I don't know if we're like getting too far ahead of ourselves here, but how long was the process of, you know what, this isn't for me. Like, I'm not going to be a biologist. I'm not working for the government. And then I want to bring some of my like Cuban roots and this food culture to where I'm at, to like opening day of the food truck. What, 1 year, 3 days, like how quick did that happen?
shockingly quick for what I understand it should take to open a business. I decided I didn't want to do seasonal work for the Forest Service, sort of midwinter, because so my summer season was like May to October. And then sometime in like January, February, I was like, I don't think I'm going to do it. Like, I can always go back if I need to, because they're always flying seasonal jobs. Like, just like take the leap. And I actually had applied for a job with a nonprofit who does like conservation lobbying, essentially. And so I would have done that, but I would have had to move to Boise. And I really love Stanley, and I didn't want to move to a bigger place. And so I was real with myself yet again. And I was like, am I ready to leave this community I'm in right now? Like, and the answer was no, because I feel like I have unfinished business always in these mountains and with these people. And so in the spring, so in about May of last year, so 2022, I was like, well, I can read about it, but I'm not going to drop a penny on it until I find a food truck. And in May, I was with my partner's family. We were visiting them for his dad's 70th birthday. And we were just like on a road trip in Nevada, of all places. Okay. And I was just like Craigslisting really aggressively looking for food trucks in the Salt Lake area, because that's sort of the closest major hub to where I'm at. And I found like two or three trucks that maybe would work. And there was one that I was like, whoa, if I can find a commercial kitchen to bake out of, like, that could be the real deal. And I got home, and like a month later, I paid for the LLC, paid for all the business licenses, started studying for my food manager's test and food protection manager test with the state, bought the trailer, found a spot to park it, got the commissary, like did all my recipes, did all my pricing, like made more spreadsheets than I've ever made in my whole life, and opened by mid-June, which was psycho. It was literally crazy.
That's like what, 4.5 months or 5 months?
Or no, it was so May of 2022 to June of
May.
Yeah, it was it was like 6 weeks of absolute chaos and like calling in every favor I've ever earned in my entire life, where I was like calling like former restaurant bosses from when I grew up in Chicago, or just outside of Chicago in Skokie. And I like called former restaurant bosses and was like texting my dad to ask his restaurant friends questions, and was asking restaurant people in town questions, and was like frantically calling every helpline that the state and the health department had. And I essentially became my 24-hour obsession, like full-time 24 hours a day, 7 days a week obsession until I could open. And yeah, it was chaos.
Wow. So what's the food truck called?
It's called La Osera, which means the bear den.
Okay.
And it's just, so the truck I found, it was really cool. It was the only truck I looked at in person.
Okay.
As you can imagine, I didn't have a whole lot of time.
That makes sense.
So the reason I was kind of rushing things is because Stanley is a very seasonal boom and bust town. And so if you miss like making money in the summer, you're just not going to make money that year. If you're trying to be a summer seasonal business. And so I was like, if I don't open before the 4th of July, like I'm missing out on huge money for the fact that I'm investing everything I have right now to make this happen. And so that was why I was like hauling through the calendar as fast as I could.
But
and so when I found that food truck, I drove to Salt Lake, and this woman had to randomly like up and move with her child to Texas in the next month. And she was like really looking to get rid of it. Took a couple $1,000s off, which was a godsend, because as you can imagine, I was really hemorrhaging at the time. and it used to be a cheesecake popsicle stand. And so it had really awesome like freezers and refrigerators and a big water tank and all the right sinks. And it was fully like commercial on the inside. Wow. So I didn't actually have to convert anything except the decals, really, which was sick.
That's so awesome. So that made 6 weeks much more feasible.
Totally.
Wow.
Yeah. It was bananas.
I can feel the whirlwind just in you describing it. So that's, I think, speaks to the chaos of a 6 week start to a business. And I think, you know, I'm wondering, I'm sure everyone else is wondering, well, how did the first summer go? Was it a booming, raging success? What happened?
Yeah, I cannot, like, I will never be able to fully process and understand how incredible the community I live in is, because like people on my day, opening day, like the entire town came out. It felt like wow. It was awesome. They sold me out. Everyone like stayed and hung out. And that was like end of June. And so I was getting the kinks out right before 4th of July. And then July is sort of just like everyone in town, if you work in service, is redlining, just absolutely redlining. And so, yeah, the tourism was there and the people liked my prices, people liked the flavors and the food, and it was such an awesome experience, and I plan to do it again next year because it went well.
Cool. Congratulations.
Thank you. I think a lot of it, just like it was such a from the heart project that it almost like was destined to do well because so many people became invested in like making sure it went off the ground. And so I feel so, so eternally grateful for that because I can't imagine how, like, it couldn't have come together without all the help I got.
Yeah. Which is awesome. So, it just makes it even more meaningful and fun to have more people involved, right? Like you get this like community support, and they get to feel like they helped accomplish it with you in a way, right? Which is also really cool. So have you gotten to go back to Cuba at this point?
Yes. That was the other insane. Yeah. This year, this last year, I guess, 2022, crazy times. Yeah. But I had planned to go for May of 2020, as I already said. And I had been sort of just like in 2019 was just really hell bent on going back, like wanted to reconnect with family. I've been keeping in touch with my cousins who are my age via email for years, and now via Instagram and WhatsApp texting, like all the, as technology has evolved, we've been able to keep in touch how we have been. And I just so desperately wanted to go as an adult and like meet everyone outside of my childhood to sort of form my own relationship with the island that is outside of my mom's immigration story and like my family's immigration story, because that's their experience, right? And that informs my experience, but I wanted like my own, I wanted to dig my toes into the soil and like just really, really feel what it was like for me as a person to be there. And so obviously very shattering to not be able to go. And I had originally signed up because I wanted to really, there's such a complicated history between the US and Cuba as countries. And I'm not going to go off the deep end on that because it's just like decades and decades and decades of really, really nuanced stuff. And so for people who are curious, I highly recommend deep diving yourself.
I'll get some resources from you. We'll put them in the show notes for people.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
But yeah, essentially, I really wanted to, because in the US, like you get one story about Cuba, and because my family chose to leave and like was able to leave, then I have their, like my understanding of their experience, but I didn't have like the missing piece of like people who I'm related to on the island and their experience, and then people who I'm not related to, like people, like total strangers who I could potentially meet in passing and like get to know and hear their stories. And so it was really important for me to not only do a family reunion portion to traveling there, but to also do a like educational aspect to it all. And one of the ways, because our governments don't play well, there are categories you can travel under. And one of them is support for the Cuban people, which essentially just means like not spending money at government owned things. So you're like staying at Airbnbs and taking private classes and taking private taxis and all these things. Yeah. And so I signed up for like a 5-day educational course through this woman, Dr. Kiona, who's so badass. and she like curated the whole thing to fit within that visa. And every single teacher in Cuba that I took classes from, like history classes, dance classes, like we were doing salsa and mambo. It was so fun. And he like curated the whole thing so that we would meet as many Cubans as physically possible who like lived there and experienced life there. And that was possibly the most important thing I've done for myself.
Wow.
As an adult person, just like doing that 5 days. I mean, it was like an adult study abroad, essentially, which like, yeah. How often do you have that chance to just be like flopped with a bunch of random other adults to have potentially a really wild and life-changing experience? So
yeah, not often. Yeah. The answer is not often. Yeah,
exactly. It's not often. And yeah. So anyways, I did that trip and that was like how I kicked off. I did 5 days on this educational tour that was mostly in Havana. And then met up with my family, 15 of my family members.
Wow.
That I hadn't seen since I was like 8 years old, maybe. And we did like a 10-day family reunion on the beach. And it was so epic. Yeah, I was there for almost 3 weeks. And I just like, I cannot truly fathom. Like everyone is so talented and creative there because they've been living under a blockade for so long. And so it's like my cousin, for example, he drove our entire family around in this converted like 1956 Ford F-250 that he made into a bus. So he can like have a transport business and like transport things across the island. Cause my family lives on the east side of the island.
Yeah.
And where we were traveling to was on the west side. And he like has these old Greyhound bus seats that he'll bolt into the floor. So he has seating for our entire family. And he just like drove 17 of us rolling deep in this giant green vehicle. And there's like diesel shortages. And so he like had a guy that he would go get diesel from. Like, it was just so cool to see how everything came together and like the resourcefulness. And especially because I feel like US culture is very counter to that, where it's like, oh, it broke, I'm just going to buy a new one.
Yeah.
And there, it's just not an option. So it's like, cool, everyone is a self-proclaimed mechanic on 50s vehicles. And it's amazing because they like have converted like boat engines to work in cars and all sorts of crazy stuff. And so it was just really inspiring to go, especially after having this crazy summer of like trying to do the business owner thing, which is hard, and having it be like challenging. Like, it was obviously beautiful and good, but it was also one of the most exhaustingly difficult things I've ever done in my entire life. Like early mornings, long days, like tight finances, the whole nine.
Yeah.
And yeah, it was really, really special to have that be like the cap to my year and like go there right after having this summer. It was nuts.
Yeah. Wow, really cool.
If you enjoy the podcast, please do us a favor and head to your favorite podcast platform and leave us a review. It helps a ton. And there's a reason all the podcasts you listen to ask you to do this. We want to continue to encourage people in the middle of their difficult seasons, and your ratings help boost our podcast visibility and the stories of our guests. Did you pause it and leave a review? If so, thank you. All right. Back to our conversation.
So I want to ask you more questions about like that part of you, the Cuba part, but I want to come back. You said a couple of things that I was like, I got to ask. So one, you said you are always in the middle of soul searching. So I'm curious what that means. And then two, you said you have unfinished business with Stanley. Or like those mountains or something along. I can't remember exactly who you had unfinished business with, but it's where you're at right now. Yeah. So I don't know which one you want to tackle first, but I'm curious about both of those things.
Totally. The unfinished business part, I think, oh man, that is a great question. Dang, you're good. So I have absolutely loved my time in Stanley. It's one of the coolest places I've ever lived because it's this tiny boom town that is just like thriving, and everyone in the summer, especially, and everyone comes there to like hustle and make everything go round. And there's 3.3 million acres of wilderness surrounding us. So like the recreation opportunities are endless.
Yeah.
And everyone, like the days are long, everyone's like good timing, just doing their best and like hustling to make the money. And then everyone relaxes in the shoulder seasons, which I think is a beautiful, like a beautiful ebb and flow for a seasonal soul like myself.
Yeah.
And with that though, it's also a challenging place to live because it is small and while the community is amazing, it also can be hard sometimes because we all do well with time alone because you couldn't live here if you didn't. But sometimes the swing between summer and winter can be really hard. And some people, like I have some friends in town who love the winter and that's like their recharge time and they hang out with all their friends in the winter. And in the summer, they're just like so nose to the grindstone and they want every tourist to like, they want all the highways to close so that we have a break for a minute. but I'm kind of the opposite where I like really thrive on like the energy that comes to town in the summer. And in the winter, sometimes I struggle with like the lack of connection compared to summertime. Mm-hmm. And so I've considered leaving most winters since I moved here, but we're on winter six. So here we go.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think part of that is just that general struggle, right? Like it's really hard to feel like you're alone, even though you have so many people that you feel so close to and connected to, but everyone's doing their own like recharge routine from summer, or like they're partnered off and have their like spouse or whoever. And so they have their person that they're doing things with. And my partner is amazing and wonderful, but he works in Alaska 3 months in the winter. Oh. And so I just am like hanging out with my dog and sometimes like struggle to have the motivation to connect with people when that's what I need the most.
Yeah.
And sometimes feel like everyone's doing their thing already, so I don't want to intrude. And so I've considered leaving several times because I have lived in bigger places where it's a little easier to, or it's less whiplash, I guess. And sometimes we want life to be a little easier and we don't need to struggle all the time.
Totally.
And I definitely, it has affected my mental health over time and just like living in cold, dark places, that'll do it too, you know?
Yeah.
And yeah. So I think that is part of like, I have wanted to leave, but kept feeling like it was like me failing or like giving up on this community that I've already poured so much into and that I do care about and don't want to leave. But when you're like crying by yourself in your house, you're like, well, maybe I should move to a bigger town so I can just like go to the brewery and hang out with some friends and not feel so alone for half the year. And so a lot of my like unfinished business mentality kind of surrounds that, where I like never want to give up on this place, but it's also not fair to pigeon myself into that hole where it's like, it's not giving up if I have to go somewhere so I can be happier. Doing the food cart felt like, or like deciding to do that felt like a last ditch effort to be like, does this town want me to be here or not? And the answer was yes, because like I said, the outpouring of support was insane. And beyond my wildest imagination. Like I just thought people were like, oh, Laura works in town, cool, whatever. And people were like telling their friends who live in other states who were coming on road trips through like 2 months later to come to the food cart, and they would. And that was the craziest part. It was like, I met so many people who were like, oh, like my friend went to college with you, but they live in Seattle and I happened to be driving through and they told me to come by. So hi, I'm so-and-so.
Cool.
So,
wow.
It's crazy. It's crazy living here, but I love it.
Yeah. So really the unfinished business part is like trying to make it home almost. Like if I could put my own words on what you're saying, is like, you want it to be home, but part of the year, it doesn't feel like it quite, or it's like hard to want to have it be home because it's lonely. And it's like, okay, how do I like, Stanley, how do I like make you feel like home year round?
Totally.
Is that like a fair way to summarize what the business is that you've got going on?
I think so. Yeah. And it makes sense. It like mirrors, like it's a, like, I just think of all, because naturalist brain, wildlife brain, like it is an extreme ecosystem in general. It's like super hot and dry in the summertime. It's high desert. It's sagebrush everywhere. And then you hit the mountains and it's like, you know, 10,000 feet of elevation. Like it's like a high elevation desert situation. And in the winters, it's like not uncommonly 20 to 40 below zero and short days. And I very much view home as like a laying roots thing. And it's hard to live as a plant when it's 40 below sometimes. So I feel like I really relate to the natural aspects of this place because of that, where mm-hmm. I struggle at the same time that it's like the hardest time to live here as any living thing. And totally.
Seasons, you know, it's like, gosh, what I wouldn't give for San Diego one season, you know.
Totally. But just then, like, 1 year of endless summer.
Yeah, so great. And but then I wonder, you know, I lived in Phoenix before I live where I live now, which is Central Washington State, so not terribly far from where you're at. Totally. And I wonder, like, how much appreciation I gain for the shoulder seasons and the like mm-hmm. summer awesomeness because of the terribleness of winter, you know?
Yes.
And it's like, would I lose that and just take it for granted and then just be like, blah? Like, I don't know for sure, but I mean, I look around when I was in Phoenix at people, and there was a lot of taking for granted the like sunshine and warmth and, you know, not having to like hibernate existence that, you know, you have in a sunny place. But
totally.
Yeah, so it's like, gosh, I really hate this winter thing. Yeah. But is it like making everything else more rich? Probably, you know, totally. But it's hard to know. And that doesn't make it not hard, but it's like, I wish that I knew, you know, like how beneficial it is if it is beneficial. Does that make sense?
Totally.
Like I have those thoughts going on in my head all the time. So I don't know how you've dealt with that. You know, I'd be curious. Because I struggle with the winter season, not in a lonely sense, but just in a like living outside and moving sense.
It's cold and dark. Yeah. For sure.
And it's like, I came to the reason this year, I've got to like choose to make it joyful or it will always suck.
Yep.
And I haven't gotten any better at it yet, but I at least have the thought, you know, I'm like, have the ability to change. But how have you, you know, you've had 6 years, this is winter six. How have you addressed that for yourself, like in any way?
Yeah. It really helps having a dog, honestly. Mm. Like even if I don't want to, I have to go outside at least 3 times a day. And so that, I mean, I moved here with him, so I've been super lucky that I've had that the whole time to force me out of my comforter and just like swaddling myself in fleece. I think definitely time outside has been the most healing, and then really trying to be better with my phone in the winter, where like not like doom scrolling and looking at social media, but like being better with my phone where like I'm sad. You know, what would make me happy? Talking to a friend. I'm going to call someone and just see how they're doing.
Yeah.
Or like texting someone, or even just like finding a YouTube video that reminds me of a friend and sending it to them. Because then I think that like loneliness and darkness sort of leaves a little bit when you remember you're not the only one experiencing it all.
Totally.
But definitely not the doom scrolling. That is not good for the mental health.
It doesn't matter how nice it is outside either.
And hot springing helps too, because that's like a very low pressure way to be outside, where you're like, oh, I can sit in this warm pool. And especially if it's sunny out, then if it's like super cold and sunny and I just can't motivate to ski, that's usually something I can motivate for, where it's like, okay, I can get in my car and drive to one of the several natural hot springs and see if any of them are vacant. And if they are, I hopefully will have some uninterrupted time there, and I can get all of my vitamin D and feel warm from the inside out.
Yeah, that sounds like a great way to experience negative 40 degrees is not have to fully experience it.
Practicing avoidance.
No kidding. But in a really good way. I am fully on board for a natural hot spring. That sounds awesome. Okay. So thanks for sharing. First of all, I think that's, you know, difficult to have to, you said it, whiplash. Like it totally sounds like that. Let's go back to the other question, the like always soul searching comment. And I'm curious, you know, like when you say that, it's a really big question, and that, like, you know, I'm basically asking about your entire life, but I don't know if you could answer it in a summarized way or not, or maybe just pick off a piece of it that, you know, is characteristic of it. But what do you mean by that?
I guess, well, we're all just on this journey, right? We're like living this crazy life, and we all have our own paths we're on. And I think I've always just been someone who's like sometimes I have a really hard time accepting that there's not like a greater meaning, and not necessarily like in a religious or like magical sense, but just like it's like, oh, I did this cart and it brought good things to the world, and that's great. And like, what other good can I bring to the world? Like, I guess that's usually my motive behind soul searching journeys, is like, I want to be the best version of me so I can like put good into the world somehow. Yeah. And sometimes I'm a little too diehard for that journey, where, yeah, it's just like really easy to be overwhelmed by possibility. Mm. Because we do live in a time where it's like, you can just buy a book on how to start a food cart and do it.
Yeah. In 6 weeks, no less.
Yeah. I don't recommend that, but it is possible if you find a truck that is perfect.
Yeah.
And I think because I've always been a very nature focused person, and because I feel, I've always kind of felt like torn, like I've always had these dualities in my life. So I think that's part of it. And the duality is being like, I grew up in the suburbs of Chicago, but all I ever wanted to do was like follow monarch butterflies around and like play in the mud. And like, that's like an awkward place to be born when that's like your childhood innate goal. And like funny story relating to that. The first time I went to Cuba as a child, I think it was the first time, I went a couple times when I was little, but my mom is like city, which is hilarious because she was born in Cuba. And my dad is Irish and Italian and just like charming, and has always been like, let Laura do Laura. She just is. And we went to Cuba, and my mom's best friend and cousin in this life, his kids are my age, and I'm like little and running around and like playing tic-tac-toe in the dirt and like hugging horses and petting dogs and getting fleas from the chickens and like climbing trees. And my mom is changing my clothes in Cuba like 3 times a day. She's like gone through all of my clothes. And her cousin finally is just like, essentially, Sandy, cut the crap. Like, my mom's name is Sandy. Yeah. And he's just like, cut the crap. Like, she's a kid. She's playing in the dirt. Like, let her be. And I feel like that is a very, like, that summarizes a lot of things about my life. And she finally was like, okay, whatever, you're right. And it ended up being really hilarious and fun. And my mom's always been super supportive, but she's always been like, are you sure that's what, okay, that's what you
want. Everything in me wants to tell you no right now, but
but we're gonna support you.
Not gonna make you into me. Yeah,
totally. And like, so that's one of those dualities for me. And then the other duality is like that, having an immigrant mom from Cuba and having like an Irish Italian American dad. And like a lot of my family on the Cuban side who grew up in America and like were born in the US to parents who were either born in the US or not, but they, like most of their parents, or most of my cousins on my mom's side, are like, both of their parents are Latino. And so like they grew up speaking Spanish or grew up around Spanish more. And like me as a kid, I mean, we spoke English in my house because my dad doesn't speak Spanish. And so that like constant pull, I feel like I've always been trying to understand myself better and like how I can fit into all sides of me. Cause I've been super lucky that family has been such a big part of my life. Like both sides of my family have always loved reunions and always loved getting together and always loved celebrating together. And so like, there was no shortage of connection, but there was always this bit of me where I was like, I'm not quite like, I don't speak Spanish fluently. And I like didn't grow up in Miami, which is very Latin. And like, all these things I'm not, that it's easy to notice about myself, even though I'm all of them. And it puts me in this spot where I feel like I constantly am trying to search for how I fit in. I think that's what it is.
And it sounds like, I would even say, you know, listening to both of the questions that you just answered, there's probably a little bit of that in the like Stanley situation.
Totally.
Like, okay, well, how do I, and you were able to, in a way, like carve a new path with the food truck.
Totally.
Right? Like you didn't have to go find a Cuban community.
Yeah.
And you didn't have to like leave to a bigger city, or you just brought like kind of this blend of everything, the food, the Spanish, you know, and the name, the like lifestyle and the busyness with people, all of it kind of got blended together.
Totally.
Which is kind of cool, you know, like.
So special.
And I commend you for that. Cause I think, you know, there's the opportunity in your situation of like almost being a victim of like, oh, I didn't have X thing or Y thing. And then just wishing that it could be different, but like you just found a new path and somebody is going to benefit from that. Whether you have kids or you get to influence somebody, like you get to encourage somebody in this new path, which is like what your mom and your dad did. And anyways, it's just so cool, you know, and I've just,
oh, thank you.
So thanks for sharing. There are a lot of things that you said in the like purpose and meaning that I want to ask about, but we're just gonna leave them there for now. I want to ask like the central question, which maybe you've already answered. I don't actually know, but I'm going to ask it anyways. And the purpose of this podcast is to be an encouragement for people in hard seasons.
Mm-hmm.
And we do that by asking other people who have been through hard seasons to share their stories and then how they grew from them. And the question is, what is the hardest thing in your life that you wouldn't take back? And then subsequently, why?
Honestly, it was really hard to go back to Cuba as an adult. Not because I didn't want to, but because I really wanted my mom to go with me. And that's just, there's like a lot of emotional baggage, obviously, with a place when you had to leave it as a kid.
I can imagine.
And she had been there before, but the tricky thing with Cuba is that each administration has different rules for travel there for people who are immigrants of there and for people who are not, like you and I, just like traveling there. We have a different visa we have to go for than what my mom has to go for.
Okay.
And all of those visas change each administration, unfortunately. And it was probably the hardest and like most drawn out because of COVID situation thing that I've had to deal with, working with my own emotions in the situation and like learning how to communicate about a really hard thing with my mom and my dad, but especially my mom, because I mean, she was just worried. Like, obviously she didn't want anything bad to happen to any of us or our family when we were there. And it's just in her nature as a mom to like always be anticipating the absolute worst thing that could possibly happen. Unfortunately.
Right.
And I think it just forced a lot of really hard and honest conversations that I don't think we would have had. And being in Cuba with the whole family, like getting my 94-year-old aunt to the beach for the first time in 20 years, like all these things that happened and like those moments and those happy tears were like worth every single like argument on the phone, in person, like tears, all of the things. And I think like the root of that, it wasn't just like, I'm going to Cuba, like traveling isn't hard for me, but I think the actual thing that was hard about that was like learning how to communicate with my parents, like what I need with what they need so that we can like I it's just me and my parents. I'm an only child. Like, I was an accident. I'm an only, like the whole thing. And so, and I love that about me and my story and my journey.
Yeah.
But I've always kind of struggled with like, they're all I have. And if we can't like figure out how to deal with something, it really affects me, obviously, because that's who I have in my unit. Yeah. And so like really putting that effort and energy toward like making something happen that I knew in my gut and my bones was beyond important, but like working through all that discomfort and those arguments and like becoming a better communicator slowly over time. That's not to say that we didn't get in arguments like right up to the day before I left, but like, but just being able to communicate because they came, that was the thing. Like they came and we had an incredible experience as an extended family because of what my like small unit was able to work through. And so I think whether like on a broad scale, like I think taking the time to communicate and learn how to communicate with people who mean a lot to you, it's super fucking hard, but it's totally worth it.
Yeah. Well, yeah. It's like, you know, like you said, there's a lot on the line in the sense that like, they're all you got.
Totally.
And they know you, like people that are the closest to you, the things they say, like have a lot more weight.
Oh yeah.
You know, like, somebody you don't know could say the same thing that your mom or your dad says to you and it'll just like water off your back, you know, but your mom or your dad say it and it's like, you know, like just hits you right between the eyes and you have to like really take it to heart. Cause it's like, they actually know what they're talking about. Cause they know me, you know? And I like, you know, I'm married and like, that's totally been my experience with my spouse. I like when we were dating, yeah, I would have always said, I'm not an angry person. I'm really relaxed. And then I just found myself yelling at her all the time, you know, and like getting in arguments. It's like, I'm not the problem. You make me angry, you know? And I was like, as the thing, you know? And then I was like, oh, wait, no, that's like in me. It's just that like, she like knows me well enough that like it carries weight to it. You know, I actually care about what she says. And so I'm like processing what you're saying. So, you know, when you're talking about this process, first of all, how long was it like from when you said, mom, dad, I want to go to Cuba this year. You know, like this is the plan. I want you to come with me to, you know, when they agreed to go, like how long was that process?
It was over 2 years because I decided to go in 2019. The trip got canceled. And at that point I hadn't even fully really convinced my family to join me on that. And then throughout the 2 years, there's just a lot of emotion tied into it, right? Like I was going on an educational tour and my mom had never really heard of that being an avenue for travel to there. So she was skeptical and she was worried I was getting ripped off.
Yeah.
And I obviously wasn't, which was great because we love not getting ripped off. But yeah, it just was like a lot of emotions tied up in it. And then, you know, when you're like, when you so desperately think you're right, like you, like from my parents' perspective, like they genuinely didn't think it was a good idea to go at the time. They genuinely didn't think that the avenue I was traveling through was a valid avenue. And so it got heated. And for me, the whole time I was just like advocating for the fact that I desperately have been needing this for years and so desperately wanted to connect with everyone as an adult. And we were just kind of at these odds where it was like they felt like I was rushing into something that maybe wasn't smart. And I mean, classic parent-child dynamic, but I felt like we were about to miss out on an incredibly special opportunity to be there. And especially because now it's post-COVID, like pre-COVID times, tourism in Cuba was kind of popping, like for the first time in a long time since the blockade, like it still exists. But like tourism had solely been enabled under the Obama administration and people were going and like the tourism industry was a thing. Yeah. And then in a post-COVID times, like everything collapsed for everyone everywhere, but especially there, because it does live under this like unique government restriction situation between the US and Cuba. And I just like, my parents live in Miami and it's awesome. And I love that for them. And I love visiting, but I would just get like so fired up every time I would visit them in those 2 years, because I'm like, we are 90 miles from Havana. Like, there are flights leaving right now. We could go. Like, we haven't seen our family in so long. And it was just a lot of like both of us trying to break out of these ruts that we were sort of stuck in. So
yeah. Yeah.
Several years of really intense conversation that did not always go well. And obviously there were a million other like touchy and sensitive and intense things going on during those 2 years. And so,
totally.
Yeah, just really special to have it come around.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I'm not going to ask you to like go into the depth of the touchy parts, but what did you learn? Like when you look back on those 2 years and all the like tension and like work that it is to like be in arguments for long periods of time, or to not agree, but still know that you've got to be in relationship, you know, like what did you learn from that whole experience?
For one, I learned there's a lot I don't know and still don't know. At the time, didn't know and still do not know about my like mom and her sister and her parents, like my mom's experience immigrating here.
Yeah.
Because every time we had a conversation, I would learn a new thing. And I was like, how has that never come up? Like, I'm almost 30. How has that not come up yet? That's crazy. And so I guess a gained appreciation for the unknown, because as like a younger member of a family or as a child of somebody, like it's easy to sort of dehumanize them in a way where you're like, your life, like I know about you because I've known you since birth.
Take it for granted. Yeah,
totally. Well, and it's more like, and maybe not as much of a taking for granted, but like a genuine, like a genuine dissociation between the person that they were when they were a child and when they were, like,
they were as you as a kid and they're
totally, and just like the personhood they have outside of your family unit as well, because like I struggle with all these things and I'm in this family unit and they struggle with their own personal things and are in this family unit, and it was just a very humanizing time for our little trio that was seemingly long overdue, at least in my perspective. And it also was just a really good opportunity to become a better communicator. Like I said, it's not that we are magically no longer arguing. Like it's a family thing that happens in my family unit and that's okay. But just being able to like draw lines where I need to draw lines so that we don't get stuck in these ruts that we used to get stuck in. It's not perfect yet and that's okay, because that's part of this like forever journey that I feel like all of us are on. It's like we're like, I didn't just like suddenly come out of my cocoon and now I'm a butterfly and my whole life is perfect. It's like this really important experience happened and now I am a new version of myself and now I'm moving forward from that and I'm on this path and it will change and what's next.
Totally. Yeah, it's like 1 degree to the next and season to season, right?
Totally.
And it's good, you know, like the conflict thing. Personally, I grew up in a family that like my parents, I never really saw them fight, you know? And so like conflict was a problem. And I got into this relationship with now my wife, who her mom punched her brother in the face. And it's like totally different, you know? Yeah. Fighting was like just normal life. And so then we got into the relationship and we're like, I just mentioned, you know, like I have all these arguments. I'm like, well, this isn't going to work because we're arguing and fighting. Like this is broken. We can't do it. And she's like, no, this is how it's supposed to be, you know, like press in. And I'm so thankful for that perspective now, because it's like, you need the tension. Like that's where it's honest. It's ugly as it can be, you know, but it's honest. And if you like trust that everybody's in it for the good of everyone, then it's like, you're going to get through it. and you want to be better at it, like you just said, be a better communicator afterwards, and hopefully like less personal attacks and more patience and grace and humility and all those things that are like really valuable. But like, it's just like the realness of relationship comes out in those moments. So I'm sure it was really valuable, even if it was really hard, you know, like you were
saying. For sure.
So 100%. So what advice do you have for somebody who's like, maybe they're like on the, they need to just get in there and roll up their sleeves and get after it with some family. And like, cause they just know that it's long overdue, or maybe they're in it right now. And they're like, gosh, this is just never, they're never going to change. This is always going to be this way. Like, what advice do you have for somebody who's in that specific situation? Well, those related, maybe not specific, but related situation.
I know, it's a pretty random situation. I was
in that very specific one.
Totally. I think my best advice is to open yourself up to be surprised, because it's really easy to just set people that you know into patterns that they've shown you for themselves. But then that prevents everyone from growing. And so like giving them opportunities to, whether it's the way you start a conversation, like starting a conversation slightly differently so that maybe they like say something in a different way that maybe is more clear or true to how they've been meaning to say it and not piss you off. But just opening yourself up to actually be surprised, because everyone, I have known my parents since I was born and they blow me away all the time. I'm like, really? That's how you felt about that? I thought you felt this way about that for the last like 15 years. And they're like, what? Where'd you get that? And I'm like, dang, I totally invented that in my head. Like, that is not, what? Where did that come from? Mm. Yeah.
So to not be surprised, and you have like practical tips for how to do that?
Oh man. When I got back from Cuba, a friend of mine was giving me just general life advice, and
solicited or unsolicited?
Solicited for sure. Yeah. And what stuck with me the most out of our long middle of the night conversation was he said something along the lines of, a blank canvas is a lot less scary when you start to fill it. And I think that applies to so many things. But in this case, like for me, I sort of interpreted that in the moment as like, if you're trying to make something happen in life, or if you're trying to like make a relationship that you have go a certain way, like if you're just staring at this blank canvas forever and not doing anything, nothing's going to happen. Or maybe it gets worse, or I don't know, but nothing happens unless you start just like swiping the brush across or splattering the paint or whatever your Jackson Pollock brain, whatever you have to imagine for that. But just like everything's a lot less scary once you first take whatever step you have the gumption for in that moment. And so like for me, when I was booking, I was about to book flights to go to Cuba. And at this point, my mom had expressed she wasn't going to come, but I figured I would call her one more time. And I like had to flat out come up with what I was going to say before I called her. And like, and I practiced and I said it over and over again for like an hour. And it didn't work in that moment, because it was like, I am buying my flights. I would like you to come with me. Like, it would mean a lot to me if you came with me. Will you please come with me? And her answer was no again. And so, and I told her, I was like, I'm buying my flights in 2 days. Like, if you change your mind, let me know. And I ended up buying my flights, and she called me, I think almost 2 weeks later, and she was just crying, and she was like, the FOMO is gonna kill me. I have to go. And this was after 2 years of her saying, no. And it just clicked for her that she could do it. And it was her breaking out of a pattern and me breaking out of a pattern. Cause up to this point, I had procrastinated buying my flights forever, because I was like, oh, I really want her to come, but she keeps saying, no, I'm just going to ask again and ask again. And I finally broke that pattern for myself, where I was like, I'm going to try a new tactic, even if it feels like I'm a robot, and I'm going to be honest with her. And then it broke, it like shook up her own pattern, where she was like, wait a second, I do want to go. She can't go without me. I'm the Cuban, you know? Yeah. And so I think that's the best, because everyone's going through their own different season right now. But the best advice is just like splatter your paint on that canvas and break whatever pattern you're in. Cause if you just stare at it forever, nothing's going to happen.
That's good advice. That's good advice for that specific situation and really just life. You know, it's like how paralyzing it can be when it's blank and there's like no direction. And it's like, you just got like the perfectionist that I think all of us for our lives takes over a lot of the times. And that just like paralyzes us.
Totally.
But when you can get it messy a little bit, you know, it's like when you get white shoes.
Yeah.
Like, oh, I can't get them dirty. You know, and you like
only wear them indoors.
Outside, you know, or like, you wear them outside, you have to like tiptoe around the mud. You're like really worried. Don't step on them. And then, but if you just got white shoes and you just went right into the mud puddle, you know, it's like, you don't have to worry about any of that anymore.
Just totally.
Throw some paint on that canvas, you know?
Yeah.
So it's good advice. All right. So I have one more question for you.
All right.
I want to talk to you a lot longer because one, you're just really engaging to talk to. And two, I have so many other like follow-up questions I'd love to ask you, but it's been, you know, we've been talking for a minute, so I don't want to beleaguer it for people. So anyways, I might come back to you and say, hey, let's talk about some other things if you're up for it.
Sweet, that sounds great.
But the way I finish all of these interviews is same question every time. And you know, we talk about hard seasons or the hardest season, but like people who are growing and maybe because they want to be, or because it's just like part of life, like hard is just, it's baked in. Like people are always doing something that's challenging. So
totally.
What is a hard thing that you're in the middle of right now?
Oh man. Well, it's winter.
Yeah.
So there's that. On surface level, that is the hard thing right now. And earlier when we had our dog interruption, I am fostering a dog for the first time and it has been extremely rewarding, but I am a very emotional being, especially with animals, as you've probably gathered. And I am having a really hard time with like, general worry that I'm like, somebody needs to want this dog and love this dog and care for this dog because he was an owner surrender and that's just not fair. And after 3 years too, which is hard because that's hard on a pup when they're an adult like that. And I think it is reminding me of just like general, the like importance of patience and love and care. And so I'm having a very emotional time because it is winter, it is dark, and because there's this dog in my life that is teaching me so many things, and I really want him to find his forever family because he deserves that.
Yeah. So you just are just in the emotional like mixing melting pot right now with the winter season and this foster dog situation.
Totally.
Just all getting mixed up together and you're processing them all.
Yeah.
Yeah. That does sound like a lot of work and kind of difficult. So
but we're just going to splat on the canvas and it's going to work out.
Yeah, there it is. Taking your own advice. That's awesome. So Laura, for people who are like inspired or just really want to like stay connected to you, maybe they got questions, maybe they're Cuban and they want to get in touch with their Cuban roots, like whatever it is, like where can people get in touch with you or follow your story?
I have an Instagram. Okay. And that is my only social media.
Okay, easy.
And my Instagram is larry.labamba.
Makes so much sense.
That is what it is. It's just my personal account, nothing fancy, but I am always happy to connect with people, and especially awesome. For folks traveling through Idaho. I love showing people around because these mountains are really special. And otherwise, yeah, I have my food truck email and I'm always looking to connect with people. And so, yeah. And cool. I can link that in the notes for you.
Yeah. That'd be awesome. We'll drop that in there. But Laura, thanks for being willing to hop on and share some of your story and encourage and entertain for, you know, almost an hour here. I think, like you said earlier, you are a very engaging person to talk to. So it was a lot of fun. Yeah. Thank you.
Of course.
Thanks for listening to the Do Hard Things podcast by Elite SRS. We hope you are encouraged today and have a newfound hope to persevere. Be sure to subscribe for more great episodes and conversations. And if you ever want to watch an episode, check out our YouTube channel at www.youtube.com/EliteSRS. Have a blessed day.